Good evening, and welcome to What a World, celebrating diversity and loving it. This is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge. Well, folks, tonight we're having a bit of a different show. Let's call Winging It with BBS Radio. We had a guest scheduled who was now unavailable. However, we have a wonderful surprise for everyone. Charlotte King will join us tonight. Originally, she was going to give us a five-minute report. However, tonight, we're going to do a full interview. Now, I have no idea of what questions I'm going to ask. I'm going to kind of wing it from her website, and we're going to take it one step at a time. However, before I get to Charlotte, let's cover a little bit of what happened on this date in history. Today is October 16th. What occurred historically? Well, in 1964, the People's Republic of China detonated its first nuclear weapon. I don't know how many of you really wanted to know that, but it is interesting considering the politics going on today. And, of course, everyone knows in the year 2001, the U.S. Started its invasion of Afghanistan on October 16th. Also, there was an International Red Cross warehouse in Kabul, Afghanistan, that was also hit by a bomb. It was an error. Actually, I think it was an aspirin factory. Born on this day. Who was born on October 16th? Well, how about Eugene O'Neill, American playwright? And he was born in 1888. And one of my most favorite movie stars, Angela Lansbury, born in 1925. And just on the side, about 6 months ago, I got to see a movie with Angela Lansbury. I don't remember the name of it. It was a war movie. She was only 17 years old when she made the film. Absolutely fantastic. And I'm going to try to locate the name of it, and I'll probably put it up on the What a World website. Current news. Well, it looks like there's a hurricane forming in the Gulf, Hurricane Wilma. I really don't have much information on it other than that it's brewing in the Florida Gulf. And today, a sad note, race riot in Toledo, Ohio. Now, folks, this is where things start getting strange in terms of people's understanding of the Constitution. As much as we may dislike a particular concept or group, in this case, it's white supremacists, they were going to march on Saturday, but a race riot occurred, people wanting to shout them down, so on and so forth. It turned into a fairly violent episode, throwing baseball-sized rocks at police, vandalizing vehicles, stores, and so on and so forth. And I think the issue here is real simple. If you're not willing to let the man that does not agree with you stand up and be heard, you've got a real problem because you don't fully understand the Constitution and freedom of speech. Now, we were going to go into lunar antics this evening, and because our guest is not available, we have Charlotte King. Hello, Charlotte. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Thank you.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. Thank you very much. And how are you feeling?
Charlotte, I know that this was a rather sudden call for you to come on the radio. I honestly don't know where to start, but I do have your website up in front of us. So the first thing I want to do is let's get some information out about your website. Where is it? What's the name of it? Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience the information they need to locate you on the web.
Okay, the website is www.visor, that's V as in Victor, I, S as in Sam, E-R, / and then the tilde sign, which is right up there by the one on your keyboard, and then the name Char King, C-H-A-R-K-I-N-G, / Or if you can't find it that way, just go on any search engine and put down the Charlotte King effect, and that should help you there.
Also, Charlotte, you have a newsletter. How, if a person wanted to get the newsletter from you, how do they go about it?
Okay, you can go to my website, and the information is there. Or if you are interested, just send me an email to charking, charking, advisor.net. I will send you a sample. The emails cost $5 per month, and that is usually 1 to 3 or more emails per week, sometimes many more, and if I'm really, really sick, not quite that many. And then also I have a pamphlet that is $30, and that includes a month of email. And in this pamphlet, I describe the symptoms, the areas, what they mean, and background material on various quakes.
Also, folks, for those who need a little bit more information, you can go to What a World radio website, look up her name on the menu, and her website is listed there. If you click on her name, it'll bring you right to her website. And the website includes all the information you need, including phone numbers. One of the most amazing things about Charlotte is she publishes her phone number on the website and tells people to call her 24/7. A marvelous woman. Let me restart here, since I am totally unprepared and kind of winging along. Let me explain Charlotte as I know her, and then I'm going to have her jump in. Essentially, what this comes down to is a number of years back, Charlotte began to relate physical symptoms to quake activity and volcanic activity. And she is best known for her accurate prediction of the major eruption of Washington's Mount St. Helens. I think that was in May of 1980. I'm not sure the exact date. And she was about maybe 10, 15 minutes off. Now, that's as much basic information. Charlotte, what I want to do is I want to get your background, but I want it totally, not just your physical symptoms. Give us an account of who you are. Who is Charlotte? Where did she come from? How did she start out in life, and how did she wind up with all these physical symptoms? Go for it.
Okay. My name is Charlotte King. I was born in Salem, Oregon in 1946. That makes me 59 years old. I seem to have pretty much everything going for me with my life. I had 3 children, a husband, a job. And then in May of 1976, I was in one of the chairs with my legs across the chair reading a novel. And all of a sudden, I could hear foghorns. And I had no idea where they were coming from. We were about half a mile from the river, but this particular river, you couldn't see from the home, but there would never be a need for foghorns on it. And other than that, it was in the middle of May. There wouldn't be foghorns anyway. And
what,
so,
what were you doing at the time?
I was just reading a book.
Okay. Do you remember what it was?
I think it was Life After Life by Raymond Moody.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that's what I was reading. It was that one or one of the Sutton books. Anyway, I instinctively got up and went to the window to look, and obviously I couldn't see anything because the river was so far away, but I just couldn't figure out what I was hearing. And it was the closest I can describe it is if you take a glass pop bottle, which they don't really have many of those around anymore, and blow across the top of it, that is the vibrational sound you get, is the sound that I hear all the time.
You hear it constantly?
24/7 since 1976. I hear 13 separate different signatures or sounds now. And I told family about it when it happened, and of course no one could hear it. And I found out that was not, when I was in a smaller area, the sound was louder. And I began to hear it at my mother's and at my friends' homes, and so I knew it was something very strange. I called the Department of Environmental Quality, and they tried to tell me it was the vacuums at the turkey plant 2 miles away, and I thought, no, I don't think so. And others tried to tell me it was my imagination, or I had tinnitus or whatever it would be. And finally...
Well, I have tinnitus, and believe me, the sound you're describing is not tinnitus.
No, it isn't. I was tested at the Oregon State School for the Deaf, and my hearing was found to be extremely acute in the lower frequencies. And in this went on for, you know, months and months and years. And finally, one night in June of 1979, in June 23rd, actually, I woke from a sound sleep, and I got very frightened, and I didn't know why. And I called the local television station, and I said, "Can you tell me what's happening? Anything on the news service?" They said, "No." And I said, "No earthquakes." And they said, "No." And the reason I ask about the earthquakes is I had begun to put together sounds versus earthquakes in the sense that the sound change, the earthquake would hit in about 3 days. But I didn't know the location.
Charlotte, hold on one second. What made you make that jump? I mean,
Nevin, I don't know. I just all of a sudden, I was watching the news a lot, and I all of a sudden realized that every time the sound changed, there was an earthquake. But I didn't have any handle at all on the location of the quake or the magnitude of the quake or anything like that, just the fact that there was a quake, which, of course, there's quakes all the time. So that really wasn't that big a deal, but it affected me to the point that I said, this means something. So when the sound changed and woke me up, and I called the TV station.
Did you have a history of following earthquake activity?
Did I what?
Prior to this, did you have a history of investigating earthquakes?
No, actually I didn't. I was interested in it, obviously, but no, I really wasn't involved in any form of seismic or volcanic activity as far as following it or wondering about it or checking out, you know, the information.
Okay, so then we know that it wasn't just a generalization from your past.
No.
Something different is occurring. Go ahead.
Something different. And so I called the TV station. I asked them what had happened, and they said nothing. And I said, okay. And so then I was watching TV, and they interrupted the television show, and they said there was a major beaching of whales going on the Oregon coast. And I thought, oh, the whales heard what I heard here, and they became confused, and they beached. And it just sort of went together. And they beached for 2 days. And there were 41 beautiful 30 to 40 ton sperm whales that beached on the Oregon coast. Massive, massive whales. And then 3 days later, there was a series of moderate earthquakes in Big Bear, California. And that just clicked for me. And I said, the earthquake caused the sound, the whales heard the sound, and they beached. And in all honesty, that's how I put it together.
That's absolutely amazing. Just on the side, were any of the whales salvaged? Could any of them be saved?
No. They would push them back into the water, and they would come right back out, which, again, made perfect sense, because if I was in pain, I could imagine what they were feeling.
Well, you must have now started relating this to your family. You have a family there. You've got
children right
there.
Uh-huh.
So, give us an indication of family life with all this going on.
Well, it was not a happy picture. The kids weren't too bad. My husband didn't understand any of it. He didn't want to understand any of it. He was a computer type person, worked with electronics, and he was just so locked into that mindset that something out of that box of his learning just didn't exist for him.
All right, now just a tangent to that. Did you have a history into metaphysics or metaphysical areas prior to this?
Well, interesting that you should ask. Just about 2 months, no, not before really, but right afterward, I had begun, after the sound started, I began taking classes in parapsychology at the local college. And the only reason I took the classes was because they were doing a series on pyramid energy. And I was very intrigued with pyramids. And so I went to the classes just to get the information on the pyramids and pyramid energy. And perhaps that made me more aware. I don't know.
But you didn't have a background in metaphysics prior to your...
No, I did not. Nothing.
Well, that really is amazing, Charlotte, because it sounds like it was extremely spontaneous. I mean, it, like a switch went on of some sort.
It was. Was, very much. And
okay, back to your family, what did it do?
Well, eventually it undermined my family, and I ended up getting a divorce. But that was later on. What happened with this was the whale speech. Did I talk to the cetacean section of the Massachusetts Institute of Cetaceans in Massachusetts and told them what my theory was? And they said, well, that made perfect sense because this part of the Oregon coast, the fault lines run perpendicular to the coast, and that would make the whales come in. And he said that would account for a lot of beachings that they had no idea why they beached. And, in fact, 5 earthquakes I have predicted for Northern California, every one of them were predicted on the strength of beachings of whales beyond the physical stuff that I was feeling as well.
Well, let's go back to the Mount St. Helens prediction back in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
What occurred?
When I was doing Mount St. Helens activity, I was always the headaches and things started in late 1979, early 1980.
What kind of headaches?
First it was just a headache, and I didn't get headaches, so that really bothered me. But as the time went on from January to February and then early March, they became a constant headache, sometimes almost blinding headache. They were always in the back of the head. And occasionally I would get something on the front of the head, but basically they were always in the back of the head on the left side. And they would make me dizzy and disoriented and nauseated and all the things that people go through with migraines. I went through the normal tests. I had the EKGs I had the EEGs for my headaches. I had the CT brain scans. Everything was normal.
Did they give you medication?
Yes, they put me on Inderol, which is a beta blocker. And that was from Dr. Yatsu, who was the chief of neurology at the University of Oregon Health Science Center. And he's now the chief of neurology at the University of Texas in Houston. And he definitely knew that I was having migraine headaches, and he put me on Inderol.
Was the Inderol effective in dealing with the headache?
Well, it helped, but it certainly didn't stop it. And
okay,
he knew that as well. But it was a PRN thing, so I could take it whenever I really needed it, which was nice.
This is early 1980, correct?
This would be January, February, early March of 1980.
Okay.
And then the headaches increased, and they began really increasing. I mean, to the point they were there from the moment I opened my eyes in the morning until I closed them at night. And I couldn't close them very often because the pain was so intense. And on the 16th of March of 1980, I got up and I almost fell over. My head hurt so bad, and I couldn't walk straight. I was walking sideways into things, bumping into furniture, etc. I thought I was having a stroke, and everything was okay physically. But 4 days later, after this onset on the 16th of March of 1980, they had the first earthquake on Mount St. Helens, and the pain switched. It just on and then off again, and I thought, I'm feeling the mountain. And it was just like you said, a switch went on in my head that said, or a light, and it said, I'm relating to the mountain, or I'm relating to this activity. And from that point on, everything the mountain did, I felt it ahead of time.
But you also actually came up with a date, a prediction for Mount St. Helens.
I did.
How did you do that?
On the actual eruption?
Yeah.
Because I knew that most of the symptoms I've had, or almost all of the symptoms that I had experienced, I would get 12 to 72 hours before they happened. And when you get into that quiescence period where everybody says, oh, I feel great, that's when I get the sickest. And that's how I know my 12-hour lead time.
So you were able to predict the eruption about 12 hours before it actually occurred.
I called it in to ABC News in Portland at 8:20 p.m. in the evening and said it's going to blow in 12 hours, and it blew in 12 hours and 12 minutes.
Wow. 12, 12 minutes off, Charlotte. You know, NASA doesn't come that close in predicting where they're going to land a spaceship.
Well,
God bless you. I don't know how you do it. It's absolutely amazing. Okay, so now, what did these people say to you when you gave them your report?
Well, the network in Portland I had been talking to now for probably 3 months previous to this, and I had been predicting the quakes on the mountain as they were happening. And I could tell them when it went into harmonic tremors. That's when the quakes are not an individual quake, but it's a constant wave. And I could feel that instantaneously, and they could confirm that. And so they really were listening to me. Unfortunately, not the night of the big one, though.
Did they report it? In other words,
I was on the news many, many times there, live on the set and as well as on as being filmed at home. They were listening, yes. But by the time the major eruption happened, everybody was kind of at the point of, oh, let's just get it over with, you know. They didn't care anymore, and that was the sad part, because had they cared, maybe a lot of people wouldn't have died. But
did you get any grief for this prediction? In other words, a lot of times, Charlotte, people who do have these abilities, you know, the messenger is not always looked at favorably. Did you get any hate mail, hate email, that kind of thing?
Absolutely not. I got dozens and dozens and dozens of letters about, you know, questions about it, lots of media from all over the country, but I didn't have one person actually come up and was negative about it at all.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
And in fact, I was in a lot of the rags that are on the newsstands. I won't go into names, but they were actually... And
oh,
I was,
Charlotte, go ahead. We have no limits on this radio.
I was in the Inquirer, the Star, the Globe, the Examiner, all of them. And, you know, the weird thing is that, except in one case, every single one of them actually read the copy back to me and cleared it with me before they printed it. They don't do that for anybody.
No, that's admirable, and I wouldn't have believed that they would have done it for anyone.
They did.
That's amazing.
It's because I took it seriously, they took it seriously.
Ah, you know, that in itself, Charlotte, might be the secret of life. People will take you seriously if you take yourself seriously. Maybe that's a little bit of information we should all tuck away. Go ahead and continue.
Okay.
Go off into tangents, anywhere you want, Charlotte.
Well, after the eruption, things got very, very busy. Then there was the next eruption 7 days later and on and on. And I was just, you know, really, really ill. And I wasn't doing well at home. I couldn't take care of my children. My husband at that time was very upset. And, you know, agreeably, I probably could have done more than I did. But anyway, we finally decided to part ways after almost 20 years. And I did the hardest thing I'd ever done. I signed over the children and the home to my husband, and I left. I went to California, and a lot of people would say, why would you go to California with all the earthquakes? But, you know, in reality, Nevin, that was probably the best thing I could have done, because I felt physically better in California than I do in Oregon.
Oh, how do you account for that? Why?
Well, because they get a lot of earthquakes, but they're just that, earthquakes. The earthquakes hurt. I mean, they can really hurt. But the volcanoes are absolutely, they wipe you out. And we had so much more volcanic activity in Oregon versus what was going on in California. I was only there about 2 weeks when I did a lecture and told them to keep an eye on the Sierras. All hell was going to break loose up there. And within 3 weeks, they had a swarm of quakes, some of them up into the over sixes, and I made a name for myself there right away. And
well, Charlotte, there are other people right now listening who also have these types of skills,
yes.
And they do create a problem within their own life.
Yes, they do.
Your marriage wound up on the rocks.
It
what
did.
What would you advise people?
Well, I think the most important thing to do is to talk to your family. Let them know that you do know something is going on. That and please always be checked out medically. Don't just take my word for it that you're a sensitive, or don't just assume you are, because you can have medical problems that mask some of these things. And if you have existing medical problems and you know about them, if you're sensitive, then that will just add to all the symptoms that you have. Everything is stronger because it always hits the weakest link of the body.
So, in other words, things get magnified. In other words, you have an illness, and this quality about a person may, in fact, magnify whatever is there already. Is
absolutely. If you have arthritis, or you've had an old break in a leg, or you've got migraines already, or you have some kind of heart problem, it will definitely create major problems.
Well, Charlotte, your family, you made a decision to leave Oregon. That's a really tough decision.
It was a very tough decision.
Share with us a little bit. How did you manage to make such a break? I mean, that is a drastic break. What were the circumstances that led to your thinking to say the only way to deal with this is to walk away?
Because I knew if I stayed in Oregon that I would never go through with it. And I knew for all intents and purposes I had everything from that marriage that I could have from it, and it was time to leave. And there was no, you know, it wasn't an issue of other people or infidelities or anything. It's just that we were growing but in different directions. I needed to do what I had to do for me, and he needed to do what he had to do for himself. And I knew the children would be safe with him. I knew they had a home, and they were friends, and their other family was here, and grandparents and everyone. And I knew that it was time to go.
How old were those children?
15, 14, and 8.
And when you went to California, where in California did you go?
I went to Sacramento.
Why? Why Sacramento?
Well, I had a friend there I had met on the phone, had never met personally, who was the head of, worked for the Office of Emergency Management, and also had previously worked for the Governor's Office of Emergency Management, and was a spokesperson for the Governor's Office. And I thought, this is where I need to be. And so I went there and stayed there until I was able to find someplace else to be. And
I
had a very little income from home because obviously he was taking care of the family. He would have been the one that was getting the alimony, not me. But he did help out a little bit. And I worked part-time. And I was fortunate enough to this person that I was with let me stay at his home and didn't charge me anything. And he opened a lot of doors because he knew a lot of people in California government. I was able to go to the seismic safety panel and meet the state geologists and other people there that were important to what I was doing.
Well, and you had a driving force behind you. I mean, with all these problems going on, you still unrelentingly continued your quest after the relationship between quakes and body symptoms.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what is it about Charlotte? What is it about Charlotte that produces such tenacity? Most people would have just thrown their hands up.
Because I knew that that's what I had to do. There wasn't a question about should I or could I. It was I had to. It was a driving force.
Yeah, I want to dig into that. You say you knew you had to. Charlotte, was there any other information coming to you? Were you being given messages in any other form that would say to you, Charlotte, this is something you need to do on behalf of the planet and its people?
No, there wasn't. It was strictly, this is what I had to do. If the pain was going to be there, and I had to endure it in one shape or another all the time, then it had to mean something.
Ah, you know what you just said, Charlotte? If you're going to be given lemons, you're going to make lemonade out of it.
That's it. Exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm going to sell it, too.
And you know what, Charlotte? So often, you know, people, they feel so victimized. But instead of picking themselves up by their bootstraps, you know, they literally fall over. You didn't. You made lemonade, kid.
Yeah.
So there you are in California, meeting with geologists, doing all this associative work between body symptoms and earthquakes. What happened then? What was the next major occurrence in your life?
Well, I guess the major occurrence in my life was I was contacted by a gentleman from the U.S. Library of Congress, a biologist by the name of Christopher Dodge. And Chris walked into my life, and it was never the same. He flew out to California, met with me, and together we formed a little coalition, a group of people called Project Migraine. And that was because of the symptoms, not because of any other acronym or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris wanted me to send to him or call him every day when he got back to D.C. And tell him prospectively of any event that I felt happening that was going to be a felt event, like a 4.5 or 5.0 or greater. I had to hit it within 50 kilometers or less, within 12 to 72 hours, give or take 12 hours. And with the probability rate, I had to give him the probability. So I had to give him the time, the magnitude, the location, and the probability.
Now, what was he doing? What was his...
I really don't know the true story behind all this, and Chris is gone now, so I can't ask him anymore, but he was sort of given this job from somebody at the Library of Congress. I think he was paid for it, but I don't have any idea why. But I know there were a lot of government people that were given the information that I gave to Chris.
This sounds very clandestine.
Well, maybe a little bit, but that was Chris anyway. That's good. That was okay. So anyway, I started calling him. And the first weekend that that Project Migraine came to be was March 31st, 1981, or March 30th, I should say. I was in Seattle. I was at the Institute of Applied Physiology and Medicine doing testing in a hyperbaric decompression chamber. And what happened is that I had been there, and I was staying at a friend's house in Bellevue, and all of a sudden I had a phone call from Salem at my parents, and they said there was a scientist looking for me from Germany that had come to Salem. So I said, okay, let me talk to him. So I did. His name was Dr. Lenander. Stan Lenander, and I asked Stan, I said, well, how long are you going to be in Salem? And he said, well, I'm only going to be here a couple of days. I said, well, I'm in Seattle, but I'm going to California. And he said, well, I'll come to Seattle to see you. And I said, do you know where Seattle is? And he says, no, where is it?
Wait a minute. How did
Hello?
How did you jump from California to Seattle?
I was taken there. Chris sent me there for testing at the Institute of Applied Physiology and Medicine from my home in Sacramento.
Okay. And so you went up to Seattle, and
mm-hmm.
At that point you're in communication
with my family in Salem.
Okay.
And they sent Sten Lenander to see me in Seattle.
Ah, okay.
So Sten came to the house, and I thought, well, this is a perfect time to go over to the University of Washington and meet all these geologists I've been talking to all this time. And I've got a real scientist with me now, and, boy, I'll tell you what, don't play with ego because you really get slapped down for it. So I decided to go over to the university, and I ended up there, and I was so proud. Here's a scientist that came to see me from Germany, and, oh, yeah, you know. And so anyway, I get there and walk inside, and I'm in there about 2 minutes, and I'm so sick. I got so deathly sick, you would never believe how sick I could get. And I was doubling over in my stomach. I couldn't stand up straight. I was dizzy. I was going to pass out. And they gave me a glass of water, and it was all I could do to hold the water. And I said, Stan, get me out of here. And we headed back to Bellevue where I was staying. And according to Stan later, he said, I told him how to get there, but he said, you were almost catatonic when I got you out of there. And I don't remember it at all. I remember nothing other than waking up in the bed with warm water bottles all over me because I was shaking so hard. and stomach pain like you would not believe. And so I ended up over at the Overlake Hospital in Bellevue, Washington, and they monitored me all night with heart pain and stomach pains. And finally they sent me home back to Seattle or Bellevue, and I called Chris, and I said, Chris, I said, all hell's going to break loose on Mount St. Helens. And he said, well, how do you know? And I told him what had happened, and the Sten was there. And he said, well, I'll get back to you on it tomorrow. So he called me the next day, and he said, I just talked to the people at the Volcano Center, and they said the mountain is very quiet. And I said, I don't care what they're saying. I said, all hell is going to break loose on that mountain. And so then he called me again the next morning, and he said, have you heard the news? And I said, no, what's that? And he said, St. Helens is on a major eruption alert. And I said, you're kidding. I said, be surprised. And so it was on a countdown at that point, and I had picked it up. I figured out what made me sick, but it took a little while to figure it out. What had happened is I was in the university office at the geology department, and they had all the drums there of all the volcanoes that were they're monitoring in the Cascades, especially St. Helens. And all of those are running on phone lines, and it was just like I was standing right there on the mountain.
Ah, you were kind of tied in.
I was definitely locked right into the mountain. And Dr. Yatsu, who was, again, the doctor that gave me the Inderol, he told me, he said, Charlotte, don't ever go near a volcano like that again. He said, you'll either be a permanent basket case or you will be dead.
Well, you have scientific confirmation between the symptoms and the planet result.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No question about it.
However, right now, you do still live in Salem, Oregon.
I'm back in Salem. I lived in Sacramento. I went back to Sacramento. I was there for 7 years. In 1986, I met my current husband. And we got married, or actually we met in 85. We got married in 86. And then he became quite ill shortly after we married, and we moved back to Oregon, to Salem, so I could boast to my family to help me out.
What's his name?
His name is Glenn, and he's a great guy.
Okay. Glenn, if you're listening or if you hear the tape, hello, Glenn.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Charlotte, mates need a plug, too. I mean, you know, given the situation that you had in your first marriage, you know, sometimes mates get to be left on the outside,
mm-hmm.
and that can happen so easily. So,
oh, it can.
Glenn, if you hear this tape, please know that everybody really, really appreciates your wife's skill. Go ahead, Charlotte.
Yeah, and I appreciate him, too. He takes a lot of calls for me when I'm at work and makes sure I get the messages. So he does his part. Back to California, and I was there for, as I said, quite a few years, and I predicted the Coalinga quake, and I predicted the San Diego quake, and all of these other quakes taking off, and especially the ones in the Sierras. Every time the Sierras would act up like Mammoth or Bishop or Bridgeport or China Lakes or whatever, I would go in, for all intents and purposes, I would end up in contractual labor.
Were you symptom involved with that major quake in California? Was it in the late 80s?
Oh, you mean are you talking about the one in early 90s?
Yes, early 90s, that's it.
Yeah, the one in Landers in 1992, I predicted that one ahead of time to Caltech, and the Northridge quake, I also predicted to Caltech ahead of time.
A list on your website of these predictions?
I don't know if I don't remember actually what I've put on there. I haven't looked at that for a while, but I have the testing that has been done, and I have some of the contact people like Linda Curtis at Caltech and these people, but I don't think I listed the specific predictions on there.
Well, the reason I asked, Charlotte, is because there are so many methods of earthquake prediction.
Oh, yeah.
And too often people do not, even though it's an anecdotal record, too often people don't record. And by recording, what could happen eventually is other people could check back historically in records. For instance, here, Charlotte, who on a certain date is saying a certain thing about symptoms, maybe another person may then go back into the records and look into the newspapers
right.
to see if there's more dogs missing, that kind of thing.
Well, what I tell people to do if they think they're sensitive, and let me say right here, what I do is not unique. The only unique thing about what I did was I put it together. I put together the list of symptoms versus events and locations where no one else had done that before. But there are hundreds and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of biological sensitives out there, or potential sensitives. And what I tell them to do is take a calendar with squares on it. If they get a symptom like a migraine or a particular type of backache or other pain that they don't normally have, put that down and then watch 72 hours and watch the news or check the computer and see what happens. And that's what I did for a year to put together my symptoms and locations.
Is there any one place that people, sensitives, can go to record? In other words, we have websites where you could record if you see a comet. Is there a place on the net where sensitives could go and say, this is exactly what I'm feeling, this is what I think will happen?
You know, Nevin, at this point, there hasn't been. That's something I've thought about. I haven't done yet. There's a lot of posted sites people can post to. But as far as actually having one for biological sensitivity, I haven't added one to my site, but I'm thinking about it. My son and I have talked about it. He does my website for me, so we've talked about it.
It's something that we might entertain. If I can talk the producer into it.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
That way it would be totally without any bias, too.
Exactly. If we did it, and under your guidance to be able to set it up, of course, it would be unbiased, and we could have people input directly into that. And it doesn't only have to be physical symptoms. At the same time, we could have a cross-reference database of dogs missing, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
there's a lot of precursors for earthquakes besides biological sensitivity.
Yeah, well, I will talk to the producer about it, and it'll all come down to how much time he's got, but it's something that I myself am interested in. I have followed a number of different sites, forums, and I know what you're talking about, where people just go on and say, oh, well, I have this or I have that, but there's nothing really in the way of a database that people can go back and
say,
hey, this is what happened with all these people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into some of the more current kinds of volcanic activity. Over the past few years, there has been a lot of discussion about the mega volcano in the Yellowstone area.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you give the audience some of your feelings, some of your thoughts about that volcanic area, and what do you know about it?
Okay, well, that is one area that actually there's a whole series of areas there that all have one major symptom, and that would be intense low back pain. Now, that is what I call my Wasatch area, which includes Idaho, Utah, Montana, and Wyoming.
Uh-oh, you just hit my hometown.
Yes, I did. And when you get into the Wasatch, you get into the low back pain in the sacrum area, way, way low on the back, and a term I have coined, seismic flu. Now, seismic flu is the instantaneous onset of stomach or intestinal flu symptoms that come and go within 12 to 24 hours without a fever. And the more you get into the area closer to Yellowstone in that area, the more chances you're going to experience seismic flu with the low back pain. But you don't get major headaches with that area any more than what I have all the time. And you don't get the heart with it. You don't, at least I don't, and you don't get the earaches with it, but you get severe back pain, you get the intestinal or stomach flu symptoms. And the reason that you get into that with the Wasatch, and then it goes on into the New Madrid, and the farther east you go into the New Madrid system, where Missouri and all the other 16 states come together there, is more and more stomach pain involved with stomach flu symptoms. And the connection is that all of these areas that cause that symptom are either primarily or totally based in granite. And granite does not liquefy under pressure, it just vibrates. And it's that frequency of that vibration that causes that symptom in people.
What is your prediction for Yellowstone, or do you have any?
For Yellowstone? I think there's a good chance that things are going to get more active as they have periodically. As far as a major eruption, no, I don't think so. At least not for a long time. I don't have any sense of volcanism coming out of there right now.
Do you have any sense of volcanism somewhere on the planet right now? Do you have any?
I think Alaska's stirring, Redout Spur and Pavlov. That's right earaches and sore throat. The Colima or the Popocatépetl volcano in Mexico, which is major headache and heart pain.
There's been a lot of activity there over the past few years.
I'm sorry?
There's been a lot of activity in that Mexico area.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then there's also Mount Hood in Oregon has been a little bit shaky off and on the last week or so. And, of course, Mount St. Helens, which has had dozens and dozens of volcano-related earthquakes again this last week.
Mount Hood, as a volcano, I mean, that would have to be rather immense. That's a big mountain.
It is, but, you know, in 1867, the Cary Stay, one of the geologists that I had met in California, and it was in a book, stated that Mount St. Helens, Mount Hood, Mount Shasta, Mount Rainier, and Mount Baker were all erupting simultaneously.
Is that an indication that these are somehow connected together under the ground?
Well, when St. Helens acts up, you watch, and you can see within 2 to 3 weeks before or after St. Helens, we have an increase of activity at the Sierras. We have an increase of activity in Kilauea in Hawaii, and we have an increase of activity at Mount Etna in Sicily. They always go in tandem.
If you were to say this to geologists, people who study volcanism, that you believe volcanic eruptions are tied together, what would their response be to you?
Well, I don't know exactly. I think some of them are more open-minded to this than they used to be. After St. Helens erupted in 1991, I got very, very ill, and I knew it was volcanic. And that's when Pinatubo volcano erupted in the Philippines. And I was able to call them on that one, in fact, notified them in the Philippines. They had a 7-minute warning, and I was told that I did save some lives up there.
Well, now, Charlotte, I know that you have a newsletter that comes out sometimes weekly. What I'm wondering is, would it be possible, I'm not asking you to publish your newsletter, but if you have a cataclysmic event that you think might happen, could we get you to post it on blogging service?
Oh, sure. I have a blog page on my own site as well, where I kind of give a little bit of a background on symptoms I'm feeling on a day-to-day basis when I update, as well as locations you might want to pay attention to. But yeah. You bet, if anything's going on of any cataclysmic nature, you'll get the information.
I've looked at your alert page. Could we pick that information up, and if you don't get to it, could
everything
you
on my alert page is open. You're welcome to use it.
So then I can copy and paste it into the news alerts on blogging service.
You bet.
Oh, thank you very much. That's most
you have to remember, though, and I want people to understand this, when I make a prediction, and I hate the word prediction, I'll use the word forecast, all my forecasts are based on past experience. I have to go just on what my body is feeling and how I relate that to what I felt in the past. And so I have about an 85% accuracy rate for most areas. On St. Helens, I have 100%. On Mexico, 100%. But I won't swear to be 100% of the time.
Charlotte, the answer to not only your writing, but all writing, whether it's a newspaper, whether it's the National Enquirer, or, folks, whether it's the Christian Bible, you better use discernment.
Absolutely. Please use discernment. Never, ever take what I have said and use it to walk away from a job or your family or leave a home or anything because you're fearful. Follow the advice of your law enforcement people, and if you want to talk to me personally, feel free to call me, but I will never tell you to leave an area or to leave your family or a job or anything like that.
Charlotte, are you familiar with the work that Jim Berkland is doing?
Absolutely. I've known Jim since before he started making his predictions.
Jim has also had his go-arounds with other geologists. How do you and Jim, by the way, Jim is going to be on the show. I'm not really exactly sure when. I think it's in around Christmas time or just before Christmas. How do you two relate your work with each other? I know that Jim uses lunar cycles.
He does, and missing animals. Uh-huh.
Okay, do you see any relationship between your physical symptoms and lunar cycles?
No, not as far as symptoms go, I don't think so, no.
But possibly one of the reasons that you don't is because we don't actually have the data recorded anywhere.
Well, no, but I look at the cycles sometimes myself just to look at them. I know that in the past, I'm talking about 1980, when St. Helens was really active, I could see a connection with more activity 1 to 3 days before and 1 to 3 days after the full and new moon, not right on the full and new moon, but 1 to 3 days before and after. But not, I've seen that connection with other events, but when people say, you know, that the moon is full and something's going to happen, it's to me, that isn't when it happens. It happens before or after, not right on it.
How does that differ from Jim's work?
Well, because Jim is a scientist, he's a geologist, and he speaks from a lot higher authority about this stuff than I can. But
wait a minute, Charlotte. Everybody on the planet is an authority. And now, if you want a credential, we can write one out for you. But you believe me, Charlotte, you are an authority. Anybody who can predict Mount St. Helens is an authority. So let's go ahead.
Thank you. Whatever. It's okay. Anyway, no, but seriously, I wasn't being, you know, glib about this. I was just saying that Jim knows more about that type of thing. That's not where my issue or my interest to study lies. Mine is in biological sensitivity and how the body relates to changes. What I believe in the Earth's magnetic field is what causes the pain and the physical symptoms that people feel before these events happen.
You know, there's been a lot of talk lately about the magnetic field of the planet being
mm-hmm.
in flux, that it's changing.
Right.
Do you have any comment on that? Do you notice anything about it?
Well, all I can tell you is I know in 1980 or 70s when this started, I used to ask people if they felt anything, and I might find one person out of every 10 I ask. Now it's 2 to 3 out of 5 people are feeling something. So I don't know if it's the fact the Earth is changing or if the magnetic fields or if it's the fact that people are just more aware or, as I have found out in talking to a lot of people, it seems that these groups of people that are sensitive all of a sudden, each time there's a major event like Northridge or Loma Prieta or Landers or Taiwan or wherever, it triggers a whole new group of people.
Well, Charlotte, I hear a lot of people, unlike yourself, who say that they can make this prediction or that prediction, and after there's an event, we get an overwhelming amount of material across the net of people who say, oh, I did this or I did that. You're one of the very few people who we actually have evidence for. And that's why I really would like to, you know, put a database together of some sort.
Okay, that'd be fine.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who jump on the bandwagon, and believe me, if we start something like this, they're going to want to jump on your bandwagon. But it's a serious issue.
Sure.
I actually came across an individual on a forum who was advocating not doing any predictions because they felt that it was unnecessary and would lead only to panic. How do you feel about that?
I think that's a valid concern. They used to say in California, they called it the earthquake country, that any prediction for a major quake, more people would die in the panic of trying to leave the city than would die probably in the earthquake. And in some cases, that's probably true. I don't know that you could put out a open mandatory leave the city sort of thing. You might have the same issues that they had in the Gulf times 10.
We had a very good example of what happens when Katrina hit.
That's what I'm talking about, yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I said, times 10. You get that many more people. And you would have more people killed trying to get out of there probably than you would if they stayed there and were just prepared.
Okay,
but I think they do need to prepare the health care people, the law enforcement people, the American Red Cross, and all these other groups of people that are there to help us when the time comes. But as far as warning the people, other than just, you know, be prepared, have your food supply, have your water, have your person outside of the city to call to let them know you're okay, all of these things that people need to do, I think it's very important.
You're advocating a full-scale preparation program within each family, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. I am fully behind that. I'm not saying that I wouldn't put out an alert. And it's up to people whether or not, like you said, discernment, whether or not they wanted to follow that. That would be up to them. It has nothing to do with me. Like you said, I'm the messenger. That's all I can do.
What would you advise people in terms of preparation? What could people do specifically to prepare?
Well, you need to have food for at least three days. You need water for each of your people, each member of your family. You need medical supplies. You need personal supplies, like toilet paper and things of that nature. You need to have if you have people that are on daily medications, you need to have at least 3 days of medications there that you can use. And you need to be able to take those medications and rotate them so you always have fresh medications in your emergency pack. You need blankets. You need a change of clothing. Good shoes, because there's going to be a lot of broken glass and stuff around. And for me personally, I keep these in my trunk of my car because, to me, I think I'll be able to get out to my car some way or the other. And that's the best place for it.
Do you keep a preparations web page of some sort?
It's on my site. I've got a link of being prepared, what you could do to be prepared. Mm-hmm.
And when people are preparing, sometimes, you know, we discuss the issue of let's not all make a mad dash for the highway, but there obviously are some places, at least within the United States, that we can say, if you're going to live here, you're taking a big chance.
Yeah, if you're going to live on the slopes of Mount St. Helens, I think you're taking a big chance.
Okay, and are there, other than something as obvious as that, are there other areas in the United States that Charlotte King would not move into?
Oh, well, I'm not gonna hurt people's property values, I hope.
Go for it, Charlotte. We have no boundaries here.
Okay. I'm not comfortable in the Bay Area. I am not comfortable in Portland, Oregon. I'm really not comfortable in California pretty much anywhere anymore. The last time I went down there for a television program, I was very, very uncomfortable driving. I had to actually pull off the road because I got too uncomfortable a couple different times. going through different areas. What I was doing was driving over fault systems, and they were making me ill.
You've given us a pretty good rundown of some areas. Charlotte, we've run out of time.
Okay.
And I thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're a real trooper, kid. We really appreciate it. So I will say good night to you.
Good night.
And you can hang up at this point, and I will make a closing. Thanks again, Charlotte, for being with us.
You bet.
And
thank
folks,
you so much.
That is our show tonight. Please, on whatever you're doing, have a safe journey. We wish you well. We wish you health and happiness, and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.